New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and the George Washington Bridge scandal was the topic on all the Sunday news shows. Senator John McCain was asked if Christie could recover politically from Bridgegate.
I thought he did an excellent job by the very lengthy press conference. Having gone through this, I know that you've got to answer every question. You can't leave any question unanswered. I think that he can now move on as long as another shoe doesn't drop.
Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, January 14th. So do you think Governor Christie can move on? Do you think the bridge scandal, and now a new one involving the use of Hurricane Sandy relief money, will hurt Christie's chances as a potential presidential candidate in 2016? 1-800-642-1234. What are your thoughts and questions? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page, The Joy Cardine Show, or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Bridget Harrison, professor of political science and law at Montclair State University in Montclair, New Jersey, and the author of several books, including American Democracy Now. Her research interests include Congress and the presidency and American public opinion. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So do you agree with John McCain? Did he do a good job at that press conference answering all the questions, and is he able to move on?
Well, you know, Joy, I do think he did a good job in the fact that up until that point, this was the first time that we heard the governor do a mea culpa, take responsibility, say that this occurred on his administration. Up until that point, he had been in denial and actually ridiculed people who had suggested that there was a political motivation and that his administration was behind these lane closures. However, where I think Senator McCain is wrong is that the governor did not necessarily answer all of the questions. For example, he did not bring in the senior staff member and ask her who was ultimately responsible for this plan. And in fact, since that news conference last week, so many more questions have emerged linking high-level officials within his administration. Further subpoenas will be issued. So this is really just the beginning. It's not quite time for Governor Christie to move past.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the emails that have been released and what we know so far. Is it clear that the so-called traffic study was political payback?
It does seem to be clear. We don't know who, in fact, was the target of that payback. There are a lot of different theories swirling around. Some claim that it was the mayor of Fort Lee. Others claim that it was a state senator with whom the governor had had a longstanding kind of political acrimonious relationship. In the long run, the motivation doesn't really matter as much as the fact that it does appear to be politically motivated, that it was directed by someone in the governor's office. And importantly, I think, there also is the indication that this is a typical MO, that this was not an isolated incident. It wasn't, you know, a case of an aide acting as kind of an independent operator and a rogue. This seems to be a pattern of behavior consistent throughout this administration in his 4 years in office.
Yeah. Can you give us a little more on that? What sorts of a pattern? I mean, what evidence is there that this was done before?
Sure. So there were lots of incidents chronicled in the media as this story unfolded, and some of them tend to be rather small. There was a state senator who had served as an acting governor, and when the two, Governor Christie and the state senator Cody, got into a legislative battle, suddenly Senator Cody's driver was pulled. That's a state employee, and so he no longer had a state trooper to escort him to public events, that kind of thing. You know, very not notified, just kind of all of a sudden the fellow that had been driving you is no longer available and not on payroll anymore. Interestingly, in this most recent kind of pattern, one of the things that we saw is these endorsements of the governor. And I think it's relatively rare for a one party to receive endorsements from the opposite party. Chris Christie had the endorsement of 60 Democratic elected officials in the state of New Jersey going into his reelection campaign in this past November. That's really rather astounding. And so one prominent mayor in the state of New Jersey is Steve Phillip, who's the mayor of Jersey City and kind of looked upon as a rising star within the Democratic Party. When he was elected to office, he received numerous text messages and emails from Bill Stepien, who was the governor's campaign manager, very congratulatory, and then offering to set up meetings between cabinet officials and the newly elected mayor. When the mayor, Phillip, decided not to endorse the governor, all of those meetings were canceled in one fell swoop. And so there is this kind of idea that, you know, state resources were being used both as kind of a carrot and a stick, and that perhaps some of those endorsements, some of those 60 Democratic endorsements, were done because of the perception on the part of the endorser that if they didn't, there would be political retribution, or perhaps their municipalities or their counties would feel the wrath of the governor.
You mentioned that Chris Christie did fire his deputy chief of staff, but one of the concerns is that he did not ask her who initiated this, who was behind this?
A little bit bizarre. So he sees the emails and text messages that implicate this senior staff member, his deputy chief of staff, Bridget Kelly, with whom he's had a very close working relationship for the past 4 years or so. And instead of hauling her into his office and saying, okay, Bridget, who's behind this? We want to know who directed this. He did not even speak with her. He did not see her. She was not in the office. She was notified, I guess, by telephone that she should not come into work and summarily fired. Now, many people will say that this is a legal maneuver, that the governor kind of didn't want to know, because then I guess he would have the obligation in any kind of investigation to indicate what he knew. But in a scandal in this type where he is talking about wanting to get to the bottom of this, it really seemed like this aide, Bridget Kelly, was kind of thrown under the bus. And most indications are that no one who knows her or anyone who knows her doesn't believe that she was the person who orchestrated this, that she tends to be kind of a loyal foot soldier, carries out directives very well, but would not be the architect of a plan like this.
So what's happening now in terms of investigations and getting to the bottom of it?
So today the governor is giving his State of the State speech, which is kind of an interesting conundrum because, you know, the state of the state is not very good and not many people are interested in education reform, though, you know, there are all kinds of policies on the table, but I think that most people won't be paying attention to those policy initiatives like they would have been 10 days ago. And now the lower house of the state legislature, the state assembly, is continuing its investigation. They will be subpoenaing later in the week both the senior staff aide, Bridget Kelly, and Bill Stepien, who was the governor's campaign manager and had just been elected to a position as head of the Republican Party in the state and also had a consulting role with the Republican Governors Association under Governor Christie's leadership. So those two people will be subpoenaed. It's likely that other subpoenas will emerge. Mike Druniak, who's the governor's spokesman, will probably wind up being subpoenaed. In that round of subpoenas, it's most likely that we will see if there are links between, for example, Governor Christie or even higher-level officials. It would probably be in that round of subpoenas because those emails, of course, would move up the chain of command. But interestingly and unfortunately, some of these staff members were using private emails, which are not subject to our Open Public Records Act. And so despite the fact that they were transmitting messages that concern state business, some of them are much more difficult for the Assembly Transportation Committee to get a hold of. There is the hope that the U.S. Attorney, Paul Fishman, who is now heading up his own investigation, will be able to access those more readily.
We will take a short break, and then we'll talk a little bit about the political damage that this scandal is doing to Governor Christie's presidential aspirations, even if he didn't know about this political payback. Will it hurt him that senior staff members were involved? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking with a political scientist from New Jersey, Bridget Harrison, professor of political science and law at Montclair State University. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, it's going to be a busy few days for New Jersey Governor Chris Christie with his State of the State speech today, Florida fundraisers and inauguration coming up, all under the shadow of the George Washington Bridge scandal. We are talking with a guest political scientist from New Jersey about the scandal, the potential damage to Christie's career, whether he can overcome the challenges, and how this story may play out. And we welcome your questions for our guest. We welcome your reaction to Bridgegate and whether your opinion of Governor Christie has changed since this story broke. And do you think he's still a viable presidential candidate in 2016? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Our guest is Bridget Harrison, a professor of political science and law at Montclair State University. Professor Harrison, I wanted to ask you before we go to the phones to talk a little bit about this this news that broke yesterday that the federal government is investigating the use of Hurricane Sandy funds for tourism ads or some such. Is this a big deal?
Well, I think that it is. A deal. I don't know how big a deal it is. The kind of backstory is that the state spent $22 million on tourism ads. This is probably not an unusual thing, but what was unusual about this is that federal money was used for a part of those ads. And when the state went to bid the contract, they chose the most expensive ad agency that happened to be the only ad agency that pitched ads that highlighted the governor. He and his family were shown at the shore kind of frolicking on the beach. And on the East Coast, it became this big stronger-than-the-storm mantra. The ads were aired in a very wide berth, probably outside our typical tourist target area. And there was many who speculated that perhaps this was done as kind of a way to have the federal government increase Christie's name recognition to some of those early primary and caucus states, including Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Virginia. So the fact that there is an audit, you know, I think that there's been a bit more political hay made of this from one of our congressmen, Frank Pallone. The reality is that there is an audit of any federal funds that were used for Sandy relief. And so this audit is not necessarily an indication that the federal government thinks that the administration did something wrong. It is rather standard operating procedure. But that is not to say that the conclusion of the investigation won't indicate that the administration did something wrong. It was clearly that more money was spent than had to be. And the question, of course, emerges, was that because these ads pitched the governor and that they were, you know, highlighting him? And so this just kind of adds to that cloud that has enveloped the Christie administration. At this point, many people don't really care about the specifics. It's now just kind of adding to the idea that this administration has engaged in corruption.
Well, many more questions for you, but our listeners also have questions and comments. Let's go to Scott in Whitewater. Hello, Scott.
Hello, thank you. I got a couple of points to make. One is that what I haven't heard is that the fact that if Christie is unaware of this, I mean, this is a huge deal, and for him to be unaware of it, I would have to think that there were some other things done that he is unaware of. And what else has you can set up all these straw men for what else has his underlings been doing. And my second point is how we as a country has reacted from newspapers to pundits to citizenry. The fact that, you know, we just do a lot of deflection towards IRS and all the other Benghazi. You know, but why do we accept things from politicians depending on whether they're a D or an R? I mean, this should be upsetting to any American, any New Jerseyite, I believe they are. And we accept it because, well, he's a Republican like me or he's a Democrat like me. And we just should not do that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much, Scott. Let me have you go to his first point first. Even if there is no link implicating Christie or in the Bridgegate, I mean, are people going to say, how come you didn't know about that? How come you hired these people?
Sure. I mean, this is kind of like, have you stopped beating your wife yet? The Scott's point where if he didn't know about it, isn't that problematic? Of course, when you're talking about, you know, a governor who's already won his last election, that's fine. But if you're talking about a presidential nominee, don't you want someone who is aware in his management style of what's going on below him, particularly when these are enormously important matters? And so the worst case scenario is that he was complicit and involved. The best case scenario is that he was ineffective in his management. And to Scott's second point with regard to, you know, the idea of corruption, absolutely. I think that we've heard a lot in both the social media and on talk shows within the past several days talking about Benghazi, talking about the IRS scandal, trying to, I think, deflect this Christie scandal and remind people of scandals that have occurred in Democratic administrations, particularly in the Obama administration. And this was essentially stemming from talking points coming out of the Republican National Committee. Of course, this is a very sane and rational strategy, right? You don't want your standard bearer attacked. You'd rather attack the other party's standard bearer. I think, though, that this scandal is a little bit different in that it first off, intentionally, which is, I think, very important, there is intent there. It is not a mistake. It is an intentional, willful act of violating the public trust in which public resources are used to punish a political enemy. And I don't by any means mean to negate the importance of Benghazi or the IRS scandal, but when you have a willful use of public resources, you know, estimates now are saying that this has cost tens of millions of dollars. I think that that's a bit of a different kind of animal than those previous scandals.
Yeah. And there's, I think, a lawsuit has been filed from the family of an elderly woman who died perhaps because of a delay of emergency vehicles getting to her because of the bridge backup.
Right. And there are several other lawsuits. There was a class action lawsuit filed last night that alleged by six livery companies whose cars were stuck in traffic. That class action suit opens up the possibility that any driver who was stuck on those roads can join the suit. There are other lawsuits pending from trucking companies. I think for people who live in wide open spaces, it may be difficult to imagine the very real and economic impact of this. One of the most heart-wrenching stories was a woman who called up, and there was a transcript of this in the emails, who called up and said, my husband has been unemployed for a year, and you just made him 40 minutes late for his first day on the job. You know, and he's been trying to get a job for over a year now. And, you know, this was the impact of that. And so when you think about those common everyday stories, and there are thousands of them, you realize that what may have started out as a joke really didn't have funny effects.
Jimmy in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Jimmy.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I want to say, as a Democrat, I'm praying that Governor Christie would actually run for president because I think he's the most honest person to run for this position, and I would vote for him in a heartbeat. I will not hold the bridge scandal against him because I truly believe that he had nothing to do with it. However, the money scandal, if it turns out that he actually used federal funding to advertise for the state of New Jersey, I think it's a terrible thing, and that would make me not vote for him.
Oh, all right, Jimmy, thanks very much for that. We have news coming up, so we'll have our guest, Bridget Harrison, contemplate your comments, and we'll talk about how the bridge scandal or the Hurricane Sandy scandal will affect Governor Christie's tenure as governor and as a potential 2016 presidential candidate when we return. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Can New Jersey Governor Chris Christie recover from Bridgegate? Will this, even if he didn't know about it or was involved in it, hurt his chances as a presidential candidate in 2016? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:37 on this Tuesday, January 14th. Governor Christie held a news conference last week. He said he had no personal knowledge of his office's involvement in this so-called traffic study that caused traffic backups on the George Washington Bridge. He said he was blindsided by emails that indicated it was some sort of political payback. He fired his deputy chief of staff. We are talking with a political scientist from New Jersey about the bridge scandal and a newer one. The feds are investigating Christie's use of Hurricane Sandy relief money now, and we are welcoming your questions and your views. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Bridget Harrison, professor of political science and law at Montclair State University in New Jersey, author of several books, including American Democracy Now. Her research interests include Congress and the presidency and American public opinion. Well, we heard from Jimmy in Milwaukee, who said that he is a fan of Governor Christie, that he planned to vote for Governor Christie for president in 2016. He said the bridge scandal really means nothing to him. He believes the governor that he was not involved with that. But he says if the governor misused Hurricane Sandy relief money, then he would not vote for him. What's your take on that, Professor Harrison?
Well, I think that that's an interesting call. In New Jersey, you know, like Jimmy, the governor enjoyed enormous popularity. So, you know, here's someone who was, when this scandal happened, when the George Washington Bridge scandal happened, he was leading by 22 points in the polls. It's not like this was a close election. He's an enormously popular governor who's enjoyed record high approval ratings since Sandy and since, you know, he kind of established a cooperative working relationship with President Obama. But when this scandal hit, it was unlike anything else that had happened in the state of New Jersey during Christie's tenure. And I think that New Jerseyans are much more willing to kind of accept you using funds to buy tourism ads that highlight you than they are having you mess with their commutes. And this caused such enormous outrage for days, and then the fact that there was this kind of stonewalling on the part of the administration. The governor claims that these emails were the first that he had seen of this, but of course, one media outlet in particular, the media outlet that broke this story, the Bergen Record, for whom I also, I should say, write a column, had requested through the Open Public Records Act emails having to do with this. So either the administration didn't fully comply with that request and do a thorough investigation for those emails, or the governor really was not in touch with people within his administration, for example, the attorneys that would be handling that request. So it's kind of surprising that he would not, at least before that news conference or before, in the days before, have known about it. I think that it's interesting, Jimmy's comment, because there is, no matter what the reason now, there is this kind of perception, at least at this particular point in time, that Governor Christie has damaged goods. And, of course, given the highly competitive nature of presidential primaries, that's not something, a monkey on the back, that a candidate wants to be walking around with.
We have Linda on Facebook who says, I doubt if he stays governor, much less run for president. Too much baggage. What about that?
Well, there has been talk within the past several days. The chair of the Assembly Transportation Committee did raise the prospect of impeachment if, in fact, the governor knew more than he has let on. So if he either knew about this beforehand, during, or if he, in fact, lied in his press conference and knew more at that particular point. The chair of the Transportation Committee has said that these actions were criminal, and if he knew about it, that there is the prospect of impeachment. In the past, I don't know, say 24 hours, there has been, I think, a bit of a stepping up on the part of Christie supporters within the state, staking their claim and saying that they'll defend the governor. But given the public outrage around this, I think it's a very tricky position for them to have. Both Democrats and Republicans, Governor Christie has some serious Democratic allies, particularly state legislators who are beholden to the political bosses with whom Christie has kind of entered into these kind of symbiotic relationships with. And so there is the idea that he may be able to weather this storm in the state. But moving forward, I think that's going to be a very difficult notion.
David in Boscobel has been waiting. Hi, David.
Hi. I got a couple quick comments based on the things the professor just said, and then my question. My comments are, it's a bit disingenuous to say that the IRS scandal would not be exactly identical to this, the notion of using government resources to, punish your political enemies, which is the allegation in the Christie case. The IRS scandal would be exactly on point to that. So for the professor to say that it's totally different is wrong. The second is, she mentioned that all these lawsuits have been filed. Those are, in fact, civil lawsuits, and they could very well be valid. My question is, now that the U.S. Justice Department is investigating, what's the actual crime that they're investigating that would lead people to believe this is anything other than raw politics at the federal level? Thank you.
All right. Professor Harrison?
Well, with regard to the IRS scandal, there is the idea that certainly there was political retaliation, but not the allegation that the president was aware and had directed this. And so I think that that's the question. I think that we can, you know, if in fact that this one individual had perpetrated this act independently, I think that we would all be willing to walk away and say, well, Governor Christie knew nothing about it, and perhaps his popularity would again spike to the levels before this scandal ensued. Maybe some people would question his ability to manage, but, you know, I think that that's probably not career-ending. But with regard to the crime, it's misuse of public resources. So you can't use what are essentially public resources for private political gain. I guess it is kind of hard for people to imagine, but if you are stuck in these lanes, you cannot go anywhere. This is kind of turn off your ignition and stand there. And this didn't happen for one day or 2 days or 3 days. This happened for four consecutive days. And the thing is that when you're listening to traffic, and I take the George Washington Bridge all the time, delays are standard, right? So you'll hear a 40-minute delay, and it's not like you have a whole lot of options that you can cut down another street. You're crossing a body of water. So your options are very limited, and you think to yourself, well, how bad can it be? No one anticipates that it can be 4 hours long, because even if there were something like an accident or if there were construction delays, typically they can reconfigure the bridge so that people get out in an hour and a half. A four-hour delay is extraordinary. I think that your caller is right in saying that these are civil litigations. That doesn't make them right. I mean, you know, these are very real damages that are incurred, but I think that there are also the prospect of criminal damages. And I'm not an attorney, but from what other attorneys have said in examining this, including the U.S. attorney, that there may, if in fact things are the way they appear, there were crimes that were committed.
Let's go to Charlie in Milwaukee. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I agree that in a lot of ways, if a politician is abusing power, they need to be held accountable, and we don't need more people abusing power. I do wonder, though, about, you know, the media playing both sides fairly. I guess when Bill Clinton had his Jennifer Flowers incident, that was turned off. And now that we had Monica Lewinsky, we kind of know that probably that was he was lying to us back then. Hillary Rodham Clinton has her lot of financial ties that her brother has taken advantage of that we never hear about.
Yeah, and I don't want to go into a long list of things that Democrats have done because our focus is what happened here. But what about Charlie's allegation that the media doesn't treat these scandals fairly?
I guess I would disagree with that. I think that the American public has had more than its fair share of coverage of political scandals from politicians of all political stripes. And I also think that, unlike some scandals, and this is a governor, this is an individual, and, you know, I've been following his political career since he came into office and doing media commentary. This is a guy who could not eat an ice cream cone without getting media coverage. He was very adept and continues to be very adept at using the media for his own political purposes. Voters in Wisconsin are familiar with the name Chris Christie because the media, with his cooperation, made it so. So I don't think that the media should be open to criticism for covering this as effectively and as thoroughly as they've covered all of his speeches and all of his actions that have made him the front runner in a presidential contest. There's the motto, live by the sword, die by the sword. This is a person who literally would attract media attention on a daily basis from the national media. And so I don't think that it is kind of untoward or surprising that the national media would be covering this scandal.
So this weekend, Christie is scheduled to head to Florida as chair of the Republican Governors Association to fundraise for some candidates. What do you suppose those candidates are thinking? Do they want Christie's appearance and endorsement right now?
Right now, we have not heard otherwise. Right now, the trip is still on. I'm a bit surprised, and I think that there's probably political wrangling back and forth. Some of these candidates are very strong candidates, and Chris Christie is a dear friend and strong ally. But for other candidates who are involved in perhaps more competitive races, they may not want to see, particularly some of the more conservative candidates, I would add, they may not want to bring Chris Christie and kind of the specter of his scandal into their campaigns, but there is, it's really a kind of tightrope that they're walking in terms of alienating a very powerful head of the Republican Governors Association, someone who's at, probably the weakest point of his political career, but we don't know what trajectory his career will take. It could be that he emerges just fine from this, thank you very much, and they don't want to alienate him. On the other hand, if he is damaged goods, they don't want to have their campaigns associated with him.
We are talking with Bridget Harrison, a professor of political science and law at Montclair State University in New Jersey, talking about the bridge scandal and Governor Chris Christie. Is he still a viable presidential candidate in 2016? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking about the political fallout of the bridge scandal in New Jersey for New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, with our guest, a political scientist from New Jersey, Bridget Harrison. And our next caller is Dave in Wanakee. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Yes, Hello. One thing that struck me, well, I've been following Chris Christie. I'm a Democrat, and I certainly wouldn't vote for him, but that's because I'm a Democrat and don't vote for Republican values. But I note that Chris Christie behaves like a bully to a lot of the people, say reporters and others, and his staff behaves like bullies, and they fit into sort of a caricature in a way. He reminds me of Tony Soprano, and I think that a lot of people wouldn't like to have a man like that as president.
Thank you very much, Dave. Well, Professor Harrison, I know I've heard some compliments of that bully image that Governor Christie has too.
Sure, I mean one of the things that we've seen is that this is a governor who has said, you know, this is who I am, and I'm not going to change who I am, and you know, he's sold this message of bipartisanship, which has been widely appealing given the national context. In some ways, many voters find his kind of brashness refreshing. You know, he's not that kind of news anchor, blow-dried candidate. And up until this point, you know, New Jersey, we found that particularly appealing, and I think that we probably have the reputation of having a bit more of an abrasive style in our state. But the governor was able to succeed in selling that kind of New Jersey-esque model nationally, and it was in many ways very surprising. But he had enormous support early on among demographic groups, particularly very young white men found him very appealing. And then as time has gone by, he's really succeeded in making inroads among independents, among some Democrats, among women, among Latino voters. But the problem I think that Dave may be alluding to is that this scandal paints that image that he had carefully sold to the American people as being honest, as being a stereotype, right? So now instead of thinking, oh, that refreshing, honest Chris Christie, people outside the state of New Jersey are thinking about Tony Soprano. They're thinking about American Hustle. They're thinking of all those pejorative stereotypes of New Jersey, a New Jersey politician, and politicians in particular. And I think that that's really unfortunate. You know, that there's this perception of corruption and bullying and foul language and all of those kind of things that really illustrates in the worst way the stereotypes about our state.
Yeah. Tim on Facebook says, my thought has always been Christie is not a viable candidate because of his centrist appeal. Christie lacks the smoothness and tact to navigate the primaries while simultaneously appealing to the base and his current fans. But I honestly doubt that his fans or the Republican base cares at all about these scandals. Well, talk a little bit about, his image as being more of a centrist than a conservative.
Right. I mean, he is. I mean, particularly on the national scale. I mean, he's conservative in many regards in New Jersey politics. He's enacted certain policies that many people in the state don't approve of, but we've kind of acknowledged broadly that this is part of his attempt to secure a presidential nomination and kind of kowtow to more conservative interests throughout the state. But to Tim's point, my thinking on this was that if your listeners might recall back in 2008, the primary process was a little bit different than it was last time around in 2012, when we had many states, particularly some of the more populous states, Massachusetts, California, moving their primaries forward, as far forward as they legally could. And what this meant was that states like Iowa and New Hampshire, while they had the first primary and caucus, the impact of those was, I would say, kind of ameliorated by this super-duper primary. And that, in my view, paved the way for a bit of a more centrist nominee, John McCain. We couldn't do this. The parties could not do this in 2012 because of concerns about reapportionment and redistricting after the census. But moving forward in 2016, that's a very real possibility, that many states will again move their primaries forward. I think it depended a lot on the field, and I guess it still depends on the field. If there are a large number or three conservative candidates out there splitting that conservative vote and only one moderate candidate, there is the potential that a moderate could win the nomination, the Republican Party nomination. But it does depend on the field, of course, and the timing of those primaries.
Well, what do you think this means for another potential Republican candidate for president in 2016, Wisconsin's Governor Scott Walker?
Well, I think that, again, it depends on the field. I mean, Walker has been talked about as a potential nominee, but of course his more conservative politics would make him go head-to-head with someone like a Marco Rubio or a Ted Cruz. And so I think that the idea that one conservative, if there is only one conservative on the ballot, that person has a very good chance of winning the whole thing. But if there are three or four splitting that vote, what we've seen time and time again is that, you know, they will fall by the wayside, but one by one, and one of them will emerge. And I don't know that that would be Walker as opposed to any one of the other conservatives.
In our final minute, how can or can Governor Christie come back from all of this?
Well, today is, as I mentioned to your listeners, today is the State of the State speech. I mean, I don't think that he can do a whole lot today to reinvent his image. I think he just has to keep his head low and give this speech and kind of muddle on through. I mean, my best estimate in how to get through this is to fully comply with every investigation. That, of course, assumes that he has nothing to hide. And that, of course, is the big question that will determine his political future.
Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Joy.
Bridget Harrison, professor of political science and law at Montclair State University in New Jersey, author of several books, including American Democracy Now. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this program. Thanks to Christy Taylor for direction and to Robin Cherry for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Coming up tomorrow at this time, we are working on a big question on a bill that would allow a 7-day work week in Wisconsin. Our guests of opposing perspectives will weigh in on whether or not employees should be able to work 7 straight days in our big question tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.